It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown creature.
Beautiful people, Unknown Preacher LA and Tatiana. Hey, I paused. We were just talking, and hey, you're going to tell me about this. What do I call it? Do I call it a date or do I call it a?
I don't know what it was.
Okay.
All right. What you got to say? A rekindling?
That might work. Yeah, I wasn't going to use that word, but.
Okay. So the person. So somebody that I used to go out with in 2021, we stopped seeing each other. I broke it off. Yeah. He tried to reconnect in 2022. I wasn't receptive. In 2023, I shut it down hard.
Shut it down.
I did. Honestly, if the road, I'm a little surprised he responded when I then reached out.
Because
I shut him down hard. I was like, you know. Well, although I will say this, I kind of left it. Oh, you might not remember this, but at the time, the way that I framed it was, you don't want to get back with me, and here's why. I didn't say I didn't want to. I said.
Yeah, I do remember that.
So that's why you responded. But, so, I reached out, told him that I live close by now, and he said, let's get together and catch up. And we did. The thing that's funny, the reason why I said you could record is because last time that I was talking about one of my, well, actually, I don't remember if, I remember one time we were talking on air and I was talking about how that person that I went out with, like, only got like a drink or something and didn't take me to like a proper sit down, something when I spent all this money on a babysitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Did I ever mention on air the time that I got together with that person in between who didn't pay?
No, I don't remember that one.
You do remember that one, but I just don't think I probably didn't remember that one. I didn't probably talk about air. I can't say the person's name.
Okay. Okay.
You
Is
know
this
the person
the where the check came on the table and.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And then later responded to something I posted on social media about being able to afford dating. And I said, like, dating doesn't cost $0. Like, it costs you something. You have to pay for a date. If I pay for myself, it's not a date.
Yeah.
The reason why that's coming up for me is because this person was running late. So I called and I said, do you want me to order for you? And he was like, well, what do they have? And I'm like, you didn't look at the menu? And he's like, no, I didn't look at the menu, which honestly, I never look at the menu either. Look at this guy standing up and trying to get in the camera. This guy, he's like really serious about getting his face in here.
Hey, man.
Anyway, I was like, do you want me to order for you? He's like, well, what do they have? And I'm like, you didn't look at me? He's like, no. I was like, you know, I'm just going to order for you. I said, do you have any allergies? And he's like, no. I was like, I'm just going to order for you. And he's like, well, don't give me any okra because I don't like okra. I'm like, okay, fine. So I ordered. So then the food comes out before he gets there. Mm-hmm. And then when they came out with the food, the guy was like trying to give me a pay. I was like, oh, I'm not paying for this. I was like, I'm not paying for this. I was like, the person who I'm waiting on is gonna pay. I didn't ask him. I didn't run it by. I just was like, yeah, I'm not paying for this.
Good for you.
And so then when he got there, I said, just so you know, I did not pay the bill. I told him that you were gonna pay, and I said, that's your punishment for being late.
What did he say?
He didn't care, and I knew he wouldn't care, and that's why I knew it was
there. Cause I was always taught the person who invites her is supposed to pay for them and the invitee, right?
That's fair. That's fair. And it wasn't my idea. But so that is fair. But it's more so the fact that we went out in 2021 and so I knew he was gonna pay regardless. So it really wasn't a punishment. That's he was paying. I already knew that. it was just fun to say it, but I knew he was gonna pay.
So you should have did that with old boy.
The one who didn't pay?
Yeah.
We don't have that rapport.
I would have just slid that daggone check to him and been like, hey, here.
If the check comes out and you just sitting there looking at it and don't even reach for it, I'm like, all right.
That's embarrassing. That's awkward, probably. Yeah.
It wasn't even expensive.
Yeah.
That's the part that irritated me, was the fact that I typically will, because if I'm ordering, like, and I know that I'm paying, like, let's say I'm out with a with my homegirl or something, mm-hmm. I might, for instance, when I was just in D.C. for my birthday weekend, we went out to dinner, my meal was $88. And then me and my homegirl who came to visit around Christmas, I went to this really nice restaurant that I had been wanting to go to for a while. And it was probably around that too, $800. Like, if I think somebody else is paying, I'm going to be more frugal than if I'm paying for myself. And so I think I had ordered, like, water. And I was so irritated because I'm like, bro, I would order, like, an actual beverage. I would have actually really ordered had I realized we were going to be doing this over the second. I would have really, really ordered. Like,
exactly. So did he have on open-toed shoes? Did he have on sandals?
You should know better than to ask me that. I'm not going out with nobody got no open toe shoes. Absolutely not. Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Okay. Just checking, man.
I mean, not if I know that that's the kind of person that they are. Because, like, I remember I went out with somebody in Mississippi and we never went out again. Don't you dare show up with your ashy toes out. No, unacceptable.
When he was drinking his drink.
I don't remember. What? Why? What does that mean?
Real men don't use straws. We just put our lips to the glass.
You're ridiculous. You're just saying stuff now. You're just making stuff up.
No, those are rules. They're a list of real man rules.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you saying that I've never seen you use a straw?
Don't call me out on some stuff. I'm just telling you they're real man.
You're a real man.
Yeah, but
I don't know that I've never seen you. I don't know if I believe that. That's not like some time for me. I don't know about that. I don't have any proof because I was not paying that much attention, but I feel like
we don't, real men don't chew gum. You know, there's a list.
Where are you getting this? I told you. And I know I didn't see you chewing some gum.
No, you have not. No, you have not seen me chewing.
Really?
Breath mints. You've never seen me chew gum.
Oh, my goodness. What's the difference between gum and a breath mint?
You're chewing your lips. Girl, you know, that like that, yeah.
If somebody is smacking us up, they're never going to see me again. To be clear, you will never see me again if you're doing all of that. Even if it's food that you're smacking on, you will never see me again if you're doing all of that. Mm-mm. Sucking on your fingers, never see me again.
See? Yep. No. Lick your fingers. Real men don't do that.
It's not because you're not a real man. It's because it's annoying.
I'm just trying to tell you the rules, man.
Where are you getting this list of rules? Show me the document. Show me where this is documented in the list of man rules.
Yeah, I'll show it to you.
I'm not going to teach Micah that.
I'm just playing. Some of it's real, though. But yeah, so it sounds like it's promising.
I don't actually know what it was. Like, to your point about what was it, I don't know that it, I don't know that I can, just because we used to date, I don't know that that was a date. But I knew I wasn't paying regardless.
I don't know I don't know.
I mean, maybe you better be direct with me because he said, let's get together and catch up.
Yeah.
Unless he thought I was going to shut him down like I did the last.
I tell you, I give him kudos though, because a lot of dudes can't have their ego can't take that. Now, when it concluded, was it, let's do this again? I may call you sometime.
We didn't even have those terminologies. I was trying to run off because I had to teach. And he was like, you can at least wait for me to pay before you run off. Like, how you just gonna run off? And I was like, okay, fine, I'll wait. So I waited in, he paid, he did say that he did not really particularly like the restaurant that I chose. Honestly, it wasn't that good, but I gave him a list of three. He didn't actually look at it, he said, choose whatever. And then he was like, I could have taken you to a real African restaurant because it was like African, he's Cameroonian.
So, I could give you warning on that one, man.
I gave him the list of restaurants available. And honestly, I was choosing based on proximity, not based on what it was.
Okay.
Because I was trying to choose something between where he was and between campus without me getting too far away from campus, because I knew I was coming after one class and had to get back in time for my next class, so I couldn't get that far away from campus. So it wasn't even, I Google mapped where he told me his neighborhood was and then where I was, and then I was zooming in on the map and trying to see what was in between and trying to be about halfway.
Cool.
So it was a coincidence.
So the next 24 hours are crucial. You wait and see if he reaches out and says, you know, hey, had a great time, have to do it again.
Oh, I already failed then.
It hadn't been 24 hours?
Yeah, but I reached out.
Oh, you see. Okay.
I mentioned a TV show while we were talking, like toward the end. And I just sent him a link to the TV show. I didn't say anything else. I just sent a link to the TV show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't say, oh, this was so great, let's do it. I would never say that, to be clear. Even if it was so great, I wouldn't say that. You can give me the link, just follow it up on what I said, to watch the show that I recommended.
Okay. All right. So what else are we going to talk about, or you want to keep on going on this?
You said that you wanted to talk about resentment. I actually wanted to talk about what I sent you in that link, but you said you couldn't open the link.
Oh, what was it?
The description was in the thing. Did you read the description?
Oh, let me go back and see.
Lord have mercy.
No, I've been dealing with a whole lot. My memory right now is shot, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of felt like it was related to your topic of resentment.
Yeah, so we can go with that, too. So,
You usually play the clip, and I was sending it ahead of time on purpose because I thought maybe you would say the audio thing, like, oh, I couldn't open it, and I didn't know how else to send it to you besides me sending it to you.
Man, so let's do this. You tell me about it, and I'll search for the clip and see if I can insert.
Okay.
The first trap is basically a scantily clad or suggested picture someone posts with the intention of attracting attention from the opposite sex or the same sex, depending on what they're into. Now, here's the thing. This was the same thirst trap that trapped my thirst, so I was highly aware of what the trap was because it was a very effective trapper of thirst. So I said to her, I said, hey, obviously, it's your page. I just have a question. Can I ask a question? That picture that you have pinned, top row, center slot, would you say that's a thirst trap? And she laughs and she says, well, yeah, it's a little thirst trappy. I said, well, you've already trapped my thirst. are you still thirsty? Oh, man, she went quiet. Like iPhone on do not disturb quiet. I just found it very interesting that I'm out here decluttering my DMs like a good boy per her request. And meanwhile, she's got the storefront looking like buy one, slide in free. Okay, but you know how it goes in dating, right? We see a red flag, and instead of acknowledging that it's red, we squint real hard and say, that's not red, that's burgundy.
So basically, there was a social media post where somebody was talking about how Devon Franklin was like recently talking about his decision to divorce Megan Good. And as he was discussing his reason, he basically said that it was because, ooh, I hope Rod is not listening, because I already know he listened to when we talked about that dress. And was sending it. I don't want to hear no vicarious lip from you about what I'm about to say if you're listening, Rod. I don't want to hear no messages being sent about no lip. Okay, so basically, Devon Franklin said that the reason why he was divorcing her, he was thinking about when she would post thirst traps on social media and didn't delete them. And people in the comments were basically like, you knew who you were marrying. Like, you knew that this was somebody who dressed in a certain way or post certain pictures. This is an actress. And like, you know, it's not like she was some deaconess on the whatever board or whatever, even though y'all had a faith-led relationship. She dressed in a certain way or whatever beforehand. So that was part of what people were saying in the comments. The other thing that people were saying in the comments was like, why are you still speaking on this? Like, you're remarried to somebody else. She's remarried. Why are you coming out the blue talking about, oh, yeah, I didn't like that she was posting thirst traps and I asked her to delete it and she didn't. So what the video was him like on stage. It looked like a stand-up routine.
Mm-hmm.
Of him talking about, I don't know what it actually was, but as I was watching the video, it looked like a stand-up routine. He was telling the stories in a joking fashion. People in the audience are laughing. And he's talking about how, he's basically like, you already trapped me. I know about these thirst traps because I saw those thirst traps and that's what trapped me. So since I'm already trapped, why are you still posting this stuff? Like, can you delete this or whatever? And, yeah, so the comments were commenting. But anyway, to your point of like, you said you wanted to talk about resentment. And I feel like in particular, when we talked about talking about this, it was in relation to being in marriages and like resenting mm-hmm. your partner. And it just felt timely because I was like, he was harboring some feelings about a social media vote. Oh, okay, Micah, he is putting his passy on my face. He just pulled it out of his mouth and rubbed it on my face. Thank you.
Awesome.
I just want you to know that it had saliva on it. As he was rubbing it on my face. That was not a dry patsy.
That's very interesting because I immediately go to, it's something deeper than that, you know, like
insecurity.
It's not about the post. Like, are you now? He's a minister too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, number one, it seems like they should have communicated all of this before they even got married.
Sure.
I don't understand. And then the other part is, you're right, it does tie into resentment because it sounds like it's something he's been holding on to for a minute. And thank God she didn't respond, right?
In that moment or like to the video being posted?
To the video now, to what he just...
Not to my knowledge, but if it were me and I'm in a whole new marriage the way that she is, I'm not even responding to that personally. But I haven't seen a response if she has that one.
I will say, and I'm trying to be nice on this, but...
Oh, goodness. Rod, you about to give a Rod response?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Because I do agree with you, like, you knew this before you married her, so, like, why now? I guess that's what I'm, without getting too deep, I'm putting it out there, like, why now?
Why are you not getting deep?
Because I try not to call people out, but...
I have to do all the calling out on here.
Yeah, you got to take one for the team sometimes. No, I'll just say... Usually when you put something out now, but you said he's married. See, I didn't even know he remarried. I knew
he's remarried.
Okay. But
and people in the comments were saying that the new wife is tremendously younger than him. I don't know. I did not fact check that. Yeah. But he looks good. So you know black people are looking. He don't look old. So I don't know what their age difference is, but they don't look different in age from I've seen the photos of them together. They don't look she don't look like a child.
Yeah, and just on the surface, without knowing all the particulars about both relationships, it appears, I'm putting that out there, that it's probably more about Megan Good's husband, her current husband.
Because he fine.
Huh?
You mean because he fine?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying it's something to do. Maybe he feels... It could be he feels insecure about him being with her now. He feels like there's a comparison there.
Just because you're holding back, does that mean I have to hold back?
No, I mean, I'm just telling you. Or there could have been
some... Can I say something? Can I say something? I just want to say that he don't need to feel no type of way about that. Because yes, her new husband is fine, and I do mean F-O-I-N-E, foine, but this man was got in the middle of a very public domestic abuse court case, like, and even though he was cleared of that, it was a very messy time to attract him, so I don't know what you feel sometimes. He lost all kinds of deals as it relates to his career at that time because of that they're getting together and dating. So why are you feeling insecure about that?
That
if that is what it's going on.
If that is it's much deeper than that. Like, guys don't look at that as a measuring stick. You know.
Well, then what's the measuring stick? You said you got the handbook of man rules. What's the man? What's the measuring? What are you measuring?
It could be her response to him versus the lack of response when they were married. It's certain things he see. Like, I don't know. Like, if you watch them publicly, and as I'm talking, I'm thinking a little more about it. Like, the way she said things and look at him. You tell me what you think, what you remember about their marriage and how she looked and interacted with Franklin versus your boy now.
I mean, she definitely, I don't know. I mean, they seem a little bit more similar in terms of their vibes and their energy and their aesthetic, her and her current husband, versus in the past. I don't know. It did feel like, this is not fair of me to say, but I'm going to say it. It felt like she was maybe, instead of being at a boil, was trying to be lukewarm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Her previous relationship on purpose. And I think that probably was because of him and his ministry, is what it seems.
And I was kind of thinking that, I'm not going to lie to you. But from also, the outside. Yeah, from the outside, we don't know. But if you're going to see this brightness, this shine on a woman when you love them and accept them for who they are. And they can be their true self around you, and versus when you're trying to get them to conform to this, the image of what it should look like. And I can only imagine, like, trying to, like, navigate through that, how stressful that is, you know. I can't go to this restaurant.
No, I was going to throw something. I didn't know you were about to say, I will wait till you're done.
No, I was just going to say, I can't go to this restaurant with my friends. People are going to say this. I can't wear this dress. They're going to say that. I can't come on this show because, you know, that's a lot of pressure. That's all.
Yeah. I was just going to say, and again, I don't know anything about this, but I'm just throwing out there what could be a situation. Nobody knows except them. Yeah. Or if they've spoken on it, I haven't heard it. So I can say that they maybe have spoken on it publicly, I don't know. Yeah. But they were married for some years and did not have any children. And I have heard Megan talking about her current marriage, and somebody asked her, like, if she thought that children were in the horizon in her current marriage. And she said that she would love to have children with her current husband. And she said, because she just loves the life that they have together. And she just feels like she would love to have children do that life with them. And I do wonder if there's any reason why that there were no children in the last relationship, and what is the difference between now you feel so excited about the prospect of that in your current relationship, and you were married for, what were they married, like 10 years or something?
About 7 or 10, that sounds about right.
And didn't have, you know, any kids. So I don't know why. There could be something that we don't know, but I just note that when she was asked about having kids or her current husband, she was like super excited about it and was like, that sounds like it would be really lovely. And I'm like,
And I will say, like, on the resentment piece of it, I mean, when you said 17 years, I'm like immediately thinking, that's a long time to be holding this about, you know, some posts. I mean, a very long time. And it's very,
they were married for 9.5 years.
And so, and then when we just talked about the pressure of being his wife too, I mean, it's easy for someone in that position to have resentment towards him.
And people were comments. People would comment when she wore something that they did not feel like it was just like the last situation with, Jamal Bryant's wife, when she, people felt like she was wearing something inappropriate, people did comment on that. And I wonder if he really actually even felt what he felt, or if he was also reacting, and maybe he did, but if a part of it was him also reacting to people's reactions to what she was putting out there, even if it didn't necessarily, because like I said, he's like he said, it trapped him.
Yeah.
He liked it.
Yeah. I remember listening to this podcast maybe just about 2 years ago, and it was this psychiatrist on it. He was talking about relationships, and I'm never going to forget this because he said things that I really had to think about. Two things. He said that when he first married his wife, see, his wife was being taken care of by her parents her entire life. And when they got together, she initially relied on him to do everything. She wanted him to make all the decisions and do all these things. And he took it upon himself to say no. He refused. He said, you're going to have to learn to do this on your own. He didn't, you know, get her car straight, doing all these things. And he told her, he said, you'll resent me because there's a level of control when you connect the dots like that. If I'm doing everything, making all the decisions, I'm controlling this situation. And then as time goes on, you're going to resent that person. And the same with money. He mentioned that. And I started thinking about that part, too, when you're in a lopsided, and I say lopsided marriage, because one person may be the one who's really financially secure, and then you're depending on their salary. And then you feel, regardless of what you say, it's easy to feel like, that person's controlling you. It's their money. It's easy to feel like I don't have a say. I don't have leverage in the relationship. And so those, to me, are just grounds for resentment to be fertile in a marriage. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense, but I don't want no spouse of mine telling me I'm not going to get your car right because... Oh, you're going to resent me. If you don't go fix my car right now, I don't want to hear that.
But
go
look do it. Well, let me back up. But you're in a position, though. You're what people would call a career woman, right? You have a profession. Yeah. You're in a... But think about it like this. You're a housewife. You're not working. And you're depending on your husband for a lot.
That would make
me
even more mad.
Huh?
That will make me even more mad because I'm at home all day making sure that the home is taken care of, making sure the kids are taken care of, and you're not going to get my car right? That will make me even more mad.
Maybe we get some housewives on here who are just...
Maybe.
I need to, because I'm not in... Yeah.
Cause I have expectations of a partner. And to me, I'm wondering what you're doing. Because if you just gonna tell me no, I'm not gonna do it because you're gonna get too reliant on me, then what are you doing?
Well, when he said it, it sounded
like it sounded like some tomfoolery to me.
It sounded like some he was dropping some science, man. You were like, what's
it sounds sometimes you be, I don't know. Some of you be sounding like they're dropping gems, and I'm like, that's just some tomfoolery for you to get out of.
Well, he said to
like
that
raking
point,
the law.
His wife thanks him now for that because she's a lot more independent.
Brainwashed. Can I hear this clip myself? I don't want to hear it. I really don't. Like, I gotta tell you, my last relationship, he did whatever I needed him to do. Mow the lawn was mowed. Like, fix whatever is broken, it was fixed. Put together this furniture, because I can't put it together, he put it together. I expect you, when I ask you to do things that I cannot do, or that's going to stress me out to do them, that you're going to do them. If I have a flat tire and I call you, fix my tire. I want to hear, I don't want you to get dependent on me. What kind of partner are you? I'm not hearing that. No, absolutely.
Well,
not. I wouldn't date that guy.
You're in a different position, though.
I'm not dating that guy at all. I wish a man would tell me that. Ooh.
Oh, no.
What are you adding to my life? What are you adding to my life? I'm over here taking care of your kids and cleaning your house, but you're not going to do what I asked you to do? Okay. But
from a financial perspective, you're in a different position, though. I'm talking about someone who solely depends, you know, on that significant other to foot the bill.
If she is a stay-at-home wife, she's not solely because she's taking care of a lot of stuff. I saw online where it was talking about all the things that a stay-at-home parent does, and it's like they put dollar amounts next to it. Okay, so you're cooking all the meals. That's you being the private chef. you're driving the kids to all of their extracurriculars, picking them up to and from school. Okay, so you're the driver. This is how much that costs. You're scheduling all of the appointments and making sure everything's getting done. Okay, so personal assistant, this is how much that costs. Child care, if you were the nanny, this is how much that typically costs. Housekeeper, this is how much it would cost for that. And so all of the things that that person is doing is bringing a dollar value of over 200 grand into that household in every year. So I'm actually doing a lot. If you're out and you're working and you're doing whatever you're doing, I'm actually holding down a lot. So if I ask you then to do X, Y, or Z, and you're like, I don't want you to be dependent on me, do you understand that you're actually dependent on me, sir, for all of these things? I don't want to hear it. I'm sorry, the fat man, he would have got an earful from me.
I agree with the value of what the housewife does and contribute to the home. No doubt about that. But you actually kind of you're supporting the argument now, because you think about it. I'm doing all this stuff, but I don't see the fruits of my labor.
Okay, but what are you doing back for me is my question. If I'm doing all of this and I ask you to do a certain thing and you're like, nah, 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 then what are you doing is my question.
Well, I don't think he was like, no, I'm not going to help you. I think he took the approach, you know, teach the person how to fish. Like, wow. Hey, baby, this is what you need to do. Call the dealership, ask them A, B, and C, you know, so they can become more independent. But to your point, if I am doing all this stuff and contributing to the home and I don't see the fruits of that, I'm going to resent you.
Everybody can do what they... I would also like to know when these people... What you say?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I would also like to know when these people got married. Like, how old were you? Because if you got married at 18, like, okay. But, like, if you got married at 30, I was independent for all of that time before you got here.
Yeah, that's good. Now, to your point, I'm pretty sure they were very... Or at least she was fairly young, because he said that her mother, I can't remember if he said mother and father. I know he said mother basically took care of her and made all the decisions for her. So she came into the relationship depending on someone not making decisions like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Yeah, you would. I think you could easily grow to resent someone like that.
You married her, though.
Yeah, when she was young, though, he was saying as years go on, you grow into, just like with Megan Good. From her top, produce market, your health food store, with vegetables and more, fresh fruits, slushy juice, and acai bowls too. Black Farmers Hub is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays. Come get your $25
fast. You married her, though.
Yeah, when she was young, though. He was saying as years go on, you grow into, just like with Megan Good. I'm pretty sure that at first, because you know, you said yourself, people were like, well, why didn't you say anything? You knew what you were getting into when you married her. But it probably wasn't that important until time went on and it festered and then the resentment.
Let me say this. I would resent a partner if they forced me into being in a position like that. Like, if you said, I don't want you to have a job, I don't want you to have an education, I don't want you to be exposed to XYZ, I don't want you doing all of these things, and you force me into a position to where I'm limited and whatever, whatever. But if I am asking it of you and you deny me, if I am asking you to handle whatever, whatever, and you're just refusing, then that's a situation where then I'm not okay with that. Like, if you say, no, you cannot have a job, I'm gonna have a problem. But if I say, baby, I would actually like to not work, and I'm asking you, like, can you hold us down in that way? And you're like, absolutely not. Those are two totally different scenarios. And what I'm hearing from this example is that the woman was asking something and he declined. And that's why I'm taking issue with this.
I hear you, but he declined under the caveat, hey, this is what you need to do.
And that's what he thinks is the right approach.
Well, he is a psychologist, you know.
I would love to talk to this person on my own. And I need more details. And it's okay if you just support him and I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling this. See, and I'm going to tell you right now, I work two jobs. As soon as I get married, I'm not working two jobs no more. I got half a mind to not even tell. I got half a mind to not even tell my next relationship that I even got a second job. So they don't even know that I quit it once we get married.
Well, make certain that when y'all talk about bills and all that other stuff, I've seen that too. You don't know until after you get married. Like,
well, no, we're going to be talking about that for sure. Don't even, that ain't even, no, because how do we know? If we haven't talked about the core values, why are we even getting married? That means we don't really know what we need to know.
Okay.
How are we even making that decision?
So let me ask you this. So if marriage is what? Unconditional love?
We'll see. I got some conditions for me. I just told you I got conditions. That gentleman said, oh, I'm not doing, okay. Those are conditions. I have a condition that you take care of me. Thank you.
Oh, Lord help us, man. Help
unconditional. The vows are conditions.
So that means the unconditional piece is taking them, whether that's for better or worse, right?
Everybody don't say the same vows, but if those are the vows that you said, then yes.
Yeah.
And sickness and health and all of that stuff, some people write their own vows. And so I might not say that in my vows.
We get it. You want a man to be able to take care of your car when you need your car taken care of.
Absolutely. I'm not taking care of my own car. What kind of nonsense is that? Do you think, why are we getting married? Like, what are you bringing to? If I got to keep doing all of that kind of stuff, why am I not still single? What are we talking about? I'm not still staying single. That's the only reason you get married. No, also put together my furniture. Also mow the lawn. Also take out the trash. All the stuff that I don't want to do.
That's building character, man.
Good stuff. Listen, do you understand that I am of age? I've built that already. I don't want to do it no more.
Oh, man. So, what else you got, man?
No, it's not even related to this. I've been trying to talk about the same topic for like weeks.
What?
I told you I wanted to talk about, because that person around New Year's, I want to say, at some point over the break, like the holiday break when it kind of end of year shut down, somebody invited me to go to church with them. And so it's actually one of my son's teachers. And apparently like all the teachers are going to the same church with each other, which I think is interesting because, okay, but she's like, yeah, come. Like, I think you would really like it, da da da. And I'm like, how would you know what I would really like? But anyway, I looked at the website of the church. I didn't like what it said. And I wanted to talk about, how do you choose, like, the right place for you? And also, to me, I prefer a pastor who shares, if I am going to go to church, I would prefer somebody who shares my ethno-racial identity, and this person did not. And I was just kind of like, And I wanted to talk about choosing that.
But I think
always find something else to talk about, and we still ain't talked about it.
No, I mean, I think that's, it's so much easier now because we're in the world of Google. I mean, you can Google and find something, at least on the surface, that aligns with your what you're in need of for being fed with the word. So like me, I've always been a person who enjoys a church where its pastor is really dissecting the word and you're really learning. I like that. Some people really, and I have friends and family who have told me this, some people just really enjoy the preaching and they want to go to a church where there's the hood and the flash behind, you know, they're really preaching the gospel and not so much of really dissecting the word and explaining, you know, the time, the place, the event, what the message is really about, you know, from a theological perspective.
What's just preaching?
Well, did I use the word just?
I thought you did.
I'm sorry. but, you know, there are some who you'll go, and no offense, I can tell you I've been in churches where I want to walk out and say, I got something out of it. I learned A, B, and C. And, oh, that's a phenomenal a way of looking at that message or the dissection of the scripture. And then some, you can go to some churches where, how do I put it? You're not really, you're hearing more of the hallelujah and God is good all the time. And, you know, won't he do it? You'll get a lot of that. Why are you smiling, man?
It's just funny.
I mean, you'll get all of that in the sermon and the message, and then you walk out and you're like, I'm going to get people you get me in trouble, T. That's all I'm going to say, man. I'm going to get people reaching out to me. I already know this is not going to be good. But nevertheless.
That's why you've been avoiding it.
Huh?
That's why you've been avoiding it.
But when you walk out, you still feel a little empty. And I know what some people are going to say already, that the church is not the all and the do all and be all. You're supposed to have your own intimate relationship with God, read the word for yourself. And I do agree with that. And that's why I say it's just a matter of choice, because I know people, that's my preference. I know people who walk out and they feeling good after that. They're like, boy, that was something, you know? And so it's all about, I guess, what you're looking for and how you want to be fed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last time that I was looking, because Micah turned a month old on Easter last year. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I was just dead set on going to church on Easter, because I was like, hey, he's turning a month old, we're going to go. And I remember explicitly I was looking for somebody who was a person of color specifically. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for somebody who made it very clear on their pastoral website that they were going to be like just more open-minded in their approach, and like like that was really important to me. I wanted to see some clues on their website that they were going to have an open-minded approach to the world and to leading people. And I found one, and I went, and I really enjoyed it a lot. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I didn't like, there was so much music, and I was like, can we have a little bit less music and a little bit more?
Yeah.
But I think that might have been because it was Easter. But when he did get to the message, I remember really liking the message, and it gave exactly what I wanted it to give. Like, mm-hmm. I want to hear the word through a lens of social justice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I got. And I suspected I would get that based on their website. And then I started following them on social media, and I get those little clips based on the messages that they post on social media. And when I looked at this particular pastor, she was like, you'll like it a lot. And I looked at their website, and I was like, nothing about what you say about your worldview and how you lead your people looks like I would like it a lot. And why would this person think that?
That's very interesting. And you know what's funny? We always said, you hear the separation between church and state, and we're not supposed to talk about politics. But
in school.
I was just going to say, I dare say that just about every church, regardless of color, because I've been to a lot of churches, you know, especially since the show, and politics, social views, the pastor's own opinion or interpretation of the Bible, all that will bleed into that message. I don't care what, you know, because we're human. But I love, was it last week or the week before, I had Pastor Campbell on, and he said something that is just so true, because there are no perfect churches. We know that. And it's just like a relationship. You have to figure out, what are you okay with? What flaws are you okay with living with in that church? And you'll find some people who will move from church to church because they're looking for something that they'll never find. You know, they're constantly finding some flaw with that church. But again, there's no such thing as a perfect church. I know that there have been some churches that I've absolutely loved the sermons that the pastor delivered, but then they sprinkled a lot of their political opinions that I didn't necessarily agree with, but they did it so much that it was just time to exit. And then I've been to some churches where the person may not have broken down the word to the way that I preferred, but you saw all the love in the building and you knew this person was doing everything they could to really lead people to Christ and just out there doing things for the community and really involved. So it's just, you're going to have to pick and choose. That would be my answer. And well, let me back up too. You definitely need to pray about it before any move. Definitely pray about it. And like I was saying earlier, I'm looking for fruit and not so much of the flash behind the word. So
I feel like what you're getting out of what they say to you, to me, is the most important thing. Because if I'm going to be coming and spending time and hearing what you got to say and delivering it and maybe shaping my life choices around what you're leading us to,
yeah,
that's kind of the most important thing to me. So I feel like, yeah, we don't want people using their religious views to make laws and stuff, because the people who are your constituents don't all share your religious identity, and that's not really fair or considerate. And we don't want that, you know, being brought into schools, because in terms of this idea of separation of church and state, because again, you might have students who have a different, you know, and we want them to all be able to learn, you know, without feeling uncomfortable because their teacher is saying something that's different from what their parents are teaching them at home in terms of their faith. But in terms of in the church itself, that's different, because that's like, that's not related to, like, I don't expect you to not talk about the world in church.
Yeah.
But I do expect you to not talk about church in Congress.
Say that last part, talk about church, what?
In Congress.
So was that helpful a lot? What do you think?
No.
Thank you, T. So what are you looking for when you say, how do I decide to go to which church to choose? What else? I mean,
because you're talking about, pray about it. You gonna be praying. You pray for me. You pray on my behalf and tell me what you found out.
Pray more, man. You got to. That relationship's important, like super important.
I'm so disconnected from that. I don't even know how to anymore.
We'll do it.
I don't even. Oh. Like, it's been so long, I don't even know what to say.
So next week, you just made me think about it. Do you remember we agreed we were going to do an episode on Church Hurt?
Yes.
And it's going to just be us, no guests or anything. So we're going to get there. We're going to see. This could be groundbreaking, man. This could be groundbreaking.
All right. You're going to make me pray.
We got it, man. So we're at the 47-minute mark, and I'm going to talk about our guests, unless you have something else to add.
I don't. Mike going to fell asleep while we're recording, so.
Okay. So my guest, and I'm going to tell you, man, God is so good, because the timeliness of this episode, it's just been, that's what I was going to talk about a little too, Kanye West and the ad and talking about the trauma and all of that. And then just the, I'm not going to get into the politics, but just the tensions around the country and around the world. And then we even see Coffee Golf had an episode, you know, and so my guess is Daria Doctor, excuse me. I've known her for a while. I knew her before. Dr. Daria Maller, and she's a licensed clinical mental health counselor and a clinical supervisor. So she's going to drop some nuggets on us about trauma. And we hear it all the time. We've experienced it. And I just think our listeners are going to gain so much from the conversation. So anything to add to you before we break?
No, I'm very excited to hear what the doctor has to say.
Yes, indeed. Well, once again, you always knock it out the park. We appreciate you. And think about it for next week, man. We church hurt. Like you look like that.
I'm not ready. We'll see. You're going to make me cry and stuff on air.
Yeah, we got it, man. We're going to do this. And beautiful people, when we come back, Dr. Daria Mallard, see you when we see you.
Proverbs 21:5 tells us, if you plan and work hard, you will have plenty. Yet for many, money feels stressful and overwhelming. If you're tired of worrying about bills and debt, there's a better way. Kira Speed, a financial coach, helps individuals and families walk in wisdom and peace with their money. And she can help you build a plan that aligns with your spiritual values and also helps you feel empowered with your money so that you can save, pay down debt, and build wealth for you and your family. Interested in learning more? Visit moneyempowered.com to schedule your free 60-minute consultation.
Beautiful people, we are back and we thank God for our mental health counselors. You know why? Because they create safe spaces. They help us make sense of pain and they help break cycles. So today's conversation is for anyone who's ever asked themselves, why do I feel this way? Or why do I keep getting stuck in the same patterns? You know, and I'm really appreciative because I'm joined by Dr. Daria Mallard, licensed clinical mental health counselor, clinical supervisor, trauma specialist, educator, and the founder of Compassionate Solutions. Dr. Mallard works with children, adults, couples, families, navigating everything from anxiety and depression to trauma, self-harm, eating disorders, and major life transitions. And you know what else? She's also deeply committed to trauma-informed care, not just in therapy rooms, but in the systems, in leadership, and in everyday life. And what I appreciate about her work is that it's not about fixing people. It's about helping people understand themselves with honesty, compassion, and courage. So, welcome to the Unknown Preacher, L.A., Dr. Daria Mallard. Dr. Mallard, how are you?
Hello. Oh, so you're keeping your camera off?
See, I'm the Unknown Preacher, even though everyone knows.
Oh, my name. I see what you did there.
But you know what? I've been thinking about this since season five. I think I might just reveal, and since my co-host basically told everyone I'm just an average Joe, so I said, let me just go ahead and show my face and, you know, go from there. But how you doing?
I think that's pretty cool, though. But I'm doing well.
Good.
Just living life and doing all the things, trying to maintain balance, take care of my own well-being while still holding myself accountable for all the things I need to do. So,
Hey, man.
It's a daily journey.
Yes, indeed. It's a hard job. You know, before you came on, I was saying to Tatiana that God is so good and the timeliness of God, because you and I scheduled you coming on months ago, right? And this week, there are stories about Kanye West, you know, and his trauma, and then not to mention the tensions going on around the country and in, you know, around the world. But we even saw Coco Gauff have an episode this week. So it's the timeliness of you coming on is just very interesting. And I want to say that I'm super proud of you, because I get to say that I knew you before you were Dr. Daria Mallard, and you're cool people. I'm just super proud. I love people seeing their full actualization.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad you remembered me.
Always.
And being a part of Toastmasters, that was actually such a pivotal point in my life, and I learned so much. I still talk about Toastmasters to this day. I even recommend it to family, friends, and even some of my clients.
Yes.
Because I was able to meet people in all walks of life with all types of backgrounds. We were all there for a variety of reasons. Yes. And I just thought it was an amazing experience. And I learned so much, and I love the people.
Yeah. Yeah. I echo those sentiments. You know, like, I've had Sharon Hill on. She was my mentor when I was in Toastmasters. And I, just like you, I really preach the benefits of Toastmasters. I've had people who are friends and family members. Actually, some actually joined me, and they were guests at some of the club meetings, and were just blown away as well. It's just a phenomenal program. I recommend it for anyone, no matter what your profession. But like you said, to meet people from all walks of life, I mean, it was just a great experience. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And obviously was able to make great connections that even after all this time, I still had your number saved.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I had your number. Yeah.
Yeah. Because here's the thing, like, when you meet someone at that stage, I mean, you just never know where people are going to go in life, and just to see, you know, the I don't know if you call it transformation or people evolve, but when you see that, man, it's just you're just really proud. If you're any kind of, to me, a decent person, a person who truly loves God and love fellow man, and you see them, you know, achieve their goals, man, it's almost like you're celebrating or a piece of that success with them, you know?
Oh, yes, sir. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
and in all honesty, I'm really just being obedient.
Well, you do it well. Yeah. And I'm going to get into these questions because, you know, you're always hearing about trauma. And I mean, to have you on here is going to be a blessing to so many people. And so, but I want to ask you, before the degrees and titles, what pulled you into this in the first place?
So I get asked that a lot. And what's interesting is this wasn't my initial route. When I went to college, my bachelor's is in criminal justice. So initially, my plan was to be a criminal defense attorney. My dad was incarcerated at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during my experience in the criminal justice program that, you know, I had my own struggles with mental health. I had seen it even in my family, seeing, you know, a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, grief. And so when I was an undergrad, you know, I was receiving my own counseling and experiencing my own transformation. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten to a low point even in, you know, my undergrad program. And so the people that helped me and were there for me, and the services and interventions and things that were provided, I realized, oh, I think this might be a better way to give back than keeping people out of prison.
Yeah.
I saw the connection because I even had a professor who was a forensic psychologist in the criminal mm-hmm. justice program. And he was actually encouraging quite a few of us to look at counseling programs for our master's programs. And mm-hmm. so the rest was really history. I applied to the mental health counseling program at Campbell mm-hmm. and the rest is a wrap. I love what I do. I really love giving back, helping people, and really like facilitating healing.
Yeah.
And being a therapist is really just a title. But the heart of the therapist and all that we are supposed to be for the client, those are the characteristics that I had already possessed. So being able to sit with people in their stuff. Growing up, I used to sit with my grandma when she had panic attacks.
Mm.
My room was next to hers. And I knew if in the middle of the night that this happened, that I was to just sit with her through it.
Wow.
And so that was normal for me. And there's so much power in being able to sit with people in their stuff.
Just to hear the passion behind the profession, there's just nothing more exciting than someone getting to a field that they're so passionate about. And I'm glad that you pivoted and went into that field. And because what's that saying? You feel like you never work a day in your life when you're in a field you really love. And I definitely,
we would hope. Yes. Capitalism makes that pretty difficult.
Yes. Preach. But I love that you, because you're basically saying this is a calling. So I love that. And you work with people at so many different stages of life. So what do you notice that stays the same, no matter the age or race? What's consistent with your clients?
Ooh. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
Something that I noticed when I started seeing older individuals, so mm-hmm. clients past the age of like 50, 55 and up in their 60s.
Yeah.
That version of you, like in your 20s, that version of us that we can sometimes neglect because we're trying to get to our goals and all the things, we put our own needs and stuff to the side, that person never goes away. Like that, those needs are still there. That person is still yearning to get their desires met and have their autonomy. So for example, if I had someone who was just a wife, a mother, and their life was based around being a wife and a mother and just taking care of others, that always came back around in older age of, I don't know how to just be with myself. And so that need for autonomy, self-conceptualization.
Imagine this. She could be your best friend, your sister, your coworker. She could even be you. On the outside, she looks like she has it all together. A nice home, a polished smile, maybe even the dream job. But behind closed doors, silence is her survival. That silence helps no one. One in four women will face abuse in her lifetime. And while some forms of abuse are easy to spot, others hide in plain sight. Behind wealth, success, and respectability, it's called upscale abuse. In John and Susie, One Woman in Four is a Susie, author Kelly Jones pulls back the curtain on traditional and upscale abuse. With raw stories, urgent insights, and practical tools, she introduces the powerful BOSS framework, showing how abusers choose, trap, and control their victims. More importantly, she gives survivors and allies the clarity and courage to recognize danger before it's too late. John and Susie isn't just awareness. It's a call to action. It shows how abuse ripples beyond the victim to children, families, friends, even bystanders, and it gives us all the tools to respond with compassion and safety. John and Susie, One Woman in Four is a Susie by Kelly Jones, is available on Amazon. Awareness is the first step. Action is the next step. Don't wait.
I see, and I am able to see in real time that the limbic brain knows no time. So that limbic brain, where our emotional responses live, you know, when we experience the things that live in our bodies, that I've been able to see people in their 50s and 60s still feel the wounds, you know, of their childhood. And the need for your own agency and autonomy is lifelong.
Wow.
And so it's interesting. It was interesting when I really started seeing more older individuals, mm-hmm. Especially like I think I said before, like a mother and a wife who, you know, spent their life taking care of other people. And then now they're a widow, or their children are now adults and have their own lives, and they don't know how to care for themselves because that was never a priority.
Yeah.
You know, asking people, so, you know, who has cared for you? Mm. And so the need to prioritize our own self and well-being, even though that can be seen as selfish, the need for that throughout our lifespan, you know, that the theme of it being a need. There's not a particular time in our lifespan that we need it more than other times. We just need it. It's always going to show up. You neglect yourself, it's going to show back up.
Mm. That's deep. That's deep.
You really can't make as much. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Something that I personally learned is that you really can't make as much impact as you think when you're not taking care of you.
Yeah.
It's always going to be limited if you're not taking care of you.
Amen.
And it's not sustainable.
Hmm. I love that answer. Very informative. You made me think of something. Because I often say this when I hear people talk about someone who's, I don't know how to describe it, but they may be dealing with something, or they may seem like they're on edge all the time, or whatever, what have you. And I'll say, I wonder how was their childhood? How much of our childhood experiences impact who we are now as adults, or even the trauma part? If I'm making sense, am I making sense?
Oh, you're making all the sense. I tend to joke and say adulthood is just unpacking your childhood for your entire adulthood.
Yeah. It makes sense too. And so we always hear the word trauma. I mean, especially nowadays, you hear trauma quite often. And when someone asks you, do I even have trauma? How do you usually answer that?
So we've all experienced trauma. Like, we mm-hmm. are all alive and living in this world. But the way that we experience things are different and unique to our own selves. And trauma in itself simply is an unhealed wound. Mm-hmm. So we can experience the same traumatic event, but it wouldn't necessarily leave the same wound. It matters how we heal. It matters what type of support we get once we experience certain traumatic events. And then healing can be stunted. And then that's where you see trauma. You see trauma responses, or people saying things like, you know, I had to be in survival mode. First of all, we're born in survival mode. The brain's primary function is survival and to keep you alive. Mm-hmm. But what people are really saying is that they're functioning in their trauma.
Mm. Makes sense. Makes perfect sense. And then what is something people often misinterpret as bad behaviors that's actually trauma, trying to survive, kind of piggybacking on what you just said?
A misconception. Well, something that I have noticed a lot Because in this day and age with social media, there's a lot of therapy speak. And sometimes there can be some weaponizing of some of these words, like boundaries, triggers, etc. I actually don't use the word triggering that often because we're not always triggered. We tend to be activated. When you're triggered, it is an involuntary, intrusive experience that is linked to your past experiences. And something that I've noticed that probably frustrates me to a point are people always talking about being triggered or their triggers, avoiding triggers. Everything's a trigger. And we're really not even understanding what a trigger is. You might just be feeling discomfort. And that is a normal part of navigating life. And so if you don't have the ability to tolerate distress, which is a life skill, then you're going to constantly feel triggered. So that's something, you know, that I've noticed that I tend to call maladaptive because, you know, you're more identifying with trauma or recalling everything trauma that's not actually trauma. It is hard, challenging, hurtful. We're going to experience a range of emotions in this lifetime. And life is meant to live and to experience these things. Emotions are meant to live their full lifespan. But then when we suppress or we push things down, then we get what I call emotionally constipated. And so even when we talk about, you'll hear people say releasing trauma, you don't release the trauma, you release the tension from your body and allow your emotions to live their full life, thus broadening your own capacity to hold your experiences. So the misconception of healing.
You just dropped some nuggets because you explain so much just listening to you because, number one, I think we go from one extreme to the other in society because, you know, growing up in a time when, you know, people would just say, get over it, you know, suck it up, right? And that's not necessarily the best approach either. And then to your point now, it seems like you see more people saying or using the word, like you just said, the words being triggered or trauma. More often than not. And so just hearing you say that, it just brings some clarity because I love what you said too, because life is life and we are going to have, you know, what they say, peaks and valleys, right? So, but so how do you distinguish though, to your point, because it makes perfect sense, but is it for us to distinguish or, you know, how do you, to your point about people frequently using triggers and using the word, the verbiage of triggers, and you hear trauma more frequently, how do you distinguish between someone who is just going through life or someone who's actually dealing with trauma?
So what I'll say to that is, if you're not my client, I'm not trying to distinguish that. Typically.
My own
I'm not your therapist. if I'm not your therapist, I am actively not distinguishing that. And so for my own clients, I'm helping them distinguish that. So there's a lot of curiosity. So I would never go into a session and tell a client, oh, you're not triggered or that's not trauma. No, we unpack all the experiences and we are curious about all of it. And every experience is data and all data is helpful and useful.
That makes sense. So if you're with a client and I can just imagine, the embarrassment or really trying to open up, because that's probably the most uncomfortable moment of that first session, right? So how do you help clients see those patterns without without the shaming?
So there's no such thing as without the shame. without the embarrassment. If we're working through it.
Gotcha.
So it's interesting because I was actually having a session today talking about guilt and wanting to take care of myself and do things, but I feel guilty and I want to be able to go and have self-care without feeling guilty. And the thing is, we can't wait to be guilt-free to do the things. The goal is to, guilt is an emotion. I do tend to create. I'm struggling with this right now because I don't believe in saying that you are a safe space. So I won't have a client come in and I say, oh, you're in a safe space. I'm a safe space. No, I let them determine that the space is safe and I do my best to facilitate a space that is as safe as possible. And so we unpack the shame. There's no avoiding the shame. We put the shame on the table and we explore it and we are curious about it.
Wow. You, I'm so glad you're on here because you're just bringing clarity to so much. What I hear, like, even on, like, on college campuses, you know, you hear, you know, students, I don't know, you just, you're really a breath of fresh air on this subject. I appreciate that.
I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk a lot about limiting beliefs. What are some of the most common ones you hear in your sessions?
Oof. Oh, so the perfectionistic cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us function in perfectionism.
Yes.
So then that also means that we're living by these invisible rules and assumptions. So I have to do this before I can enjoy this. I can't enjoy this until I do that. When I make it to this job or this goal or have this accolade, then I can deserve love or happiness. We live for these milestones and checkpoints.
Yeah.
Wait, what was the question? I want to make sure I'm answering.
No, you answered it for the, you talk about the limiting beliefs piece and I was just trying to, yeah.
So oftentimes that pattern is being driven by a limited belief. So I'm not enough or I'm not good enough or like an array of just beliefs about yourself and life and the world around you. So they're so layered. We are really onions. Like there's so many layers to pull back. It can even be feeling inadequate. And sometimes people are not aware of what the limiting belief is. So there's a lot of unpacking to sometimes even get to the true limiting belief. Because we have to open up the awareness.
Yeah. Wow.
So, but typically it is a lack of self-worth. That's typically the theme.
Mm.
So regardless of the limiting belief, the belief is equivalent to a lack of worth of self.
Yeah. So what's your approach to that? Because, you know, a lot of people know they have value, but don't necessarily feel it. So how do you help them close that gap?
So it's definitely not a one size fits all. So to be honest, it's really based on the person and whatever they're bringing to the session or bringing to the therapy. People come for a variety of reasons, too. Yeah. So it's also not my job to tell someone what they should be working on, what they should believe. And I cannot determine for them their level of readiness for change.
Yeah.
So focus really is on meeting people where they are and having some true radical acceptance.
Yeah.
And so I don't go into it trying to change the person. I go in with genuine curiosity and, you know, openness to explore all the things. Everything is all the data is useful. And then we take it from there. Whatever direction we go is based on the person. I am not the driver. They have their autonomy and their own agency. And I am the support. I provide the education, tools and the resources, help process information. And I will say, I allow people to let their patterns play out too, because that's also useful information. When people are struggling with falling back into certain patterns, we still get to dissect that. Yeah. This is still data.
That is great. That's good information. I'll tell you, it just, you're opening my eyes on so many levels. And from what I have always been presented with, and as it relates to trauma and healing and meeting people where they are, safe spaces, and you're just bringing a whole different level of clarity to it. And, you know, because I've always heard, like, okay, you mentioned meeting people where they are, and then it's like some people get stuck where they are, and it's a challenge. Like, how do you get them to move forward? And just hearing you say this, like you said, it's not one size fits all. It's not a instant formula, add, decline, and stir, right? It's just so much more to it.
Right.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And I will say, it was more challenging. This particular question it's a great question though, because I used to work, when I worked with eating disorders, I worked at a hospital or a hospital setting. So we had inpatient, residential, partial hospitalization. And it was an eating disorder facility for children and adolescents. And so you have to show improvement in order to be discharged and for your level of care to decrease. And so, yeah, you do have to hit certain points and people do get stuck. And so that's really where that questioning comes in too. And even that wasn't one size fits all, because there were different systems to invoke internal motivation amongst the kids to, you know, earn certain things. And the duality of, I don't want to die, but I don't want to eat to stay alive. And I want to go home, but I don't want to do the things I need to do to get out the hospital. And then I still can't make them do all the, I still can't make them do things. And so even when I was in the hospital, I was the therapist that would tell whoever was in my office, look, let me know what you were trying to get out of this. So you want to go home, and unfortunately you're a minor, and so your parents had to bring you here. So help me help you get what you want.
Yeah.
Like, so even if your goal is not recovery, you want to go home. So how can we figure out what that looks like, and how can I help you?
Yeah. That's a tough job. I just think about, I'm sitting here listening, and I'm thinking about someone I knew who their child was having suicidal ideations, and they were hesitant to take them to the hospital, even though that was probably the best course of action. But those perceptions, you know, once they take them there, it's a death sentence. They're going to keep them. They're going to lock them up, and it's downhill after that. They're labeled. And so all those things go through the mind of a parent. So
it's tough.
Yeah.
It's a what tough decision.
Yeah.
Because there is a risk of being traumatized in these facilities. Yeah. So the medical trauma is absolutely real. And so, yeah, then you're kind of weighing, because there's going to be trauma either way. So then now we're looking at, okay, well, which is the least amount of harm, you know?
Yeah.
But You kind of have to weigh it out. And I don't think people always get it right. I don't think providers always get it right. You're making your best judgment. It's a judgment call. But everybody's not right. And some people do have really terrible, traumatizing experiences. And I remember even being at the eating disorder hospital and having people come in who previously had a lot of traumatic experiences. And so then as the therapist, you have this uphill battle because of the mistrust, because of how mistreated people were.
Yeah.
So
yes,
it can be a double-edged sword.
Mm. I appreciate the honesty in that. And I mean, I didn't doubt you weren't going to be honest, but I just appreciate coming from a professional. When you hear that, it kind of validates and it makes people, because we'll have listeners who, you know, are hesitant, and you're basically letting them know, we understand, we get it. And it's a tough decision to make. I love that answer. And so you're passionate and you have a lot of compassion for people. So let's talk about, you founded Compassionate Solutions because you saw gaps in how trauma was being handled. So kind of walk us through the process of starting Compassionate Solutions.
So it's kind of funny because the idea was there long before the name. So while I was still in North Carolina, mm-hmm. and I was still, I was in Cary. I was working in Cary. I was back in outpatient, and I got trained in EMDR. That's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's a trauma-based modality. And I remember going to that training. It was a 40-hour training, mm-hmm. and it cost $1,350. And I was like, ooh, this is where the money is. Okay, I'm the struggling therapist, but it's the trainers that are making the money. So I took note of that.
Yeah.
Got trained, and then I became a supervisor. So the practice that I was working for needed supervisors, and I didn't even realize that for my licensure at the time, I qualified to be a supervisor. So mm-hmm. I updated my licensure really just because there was a need, and because I had a back disorder, the practice that I was working for, they needed training in eating disorders, and I was one of the only counselors that had the training just coming from a higher level of care. So mm-hmm. it naturally began, you know, doing eating disorder, different types of eating disorder trainings, and then increasing like trauma-informed trainings and integrating that, and then self-conceptualization, because that was a significant part of even working with eating disorders. You know, it really came down to like that self-concept, or struggle with self-concept. That farmer's house, produce market, your health food store, with vegetables and more, fresh fruits, slushy juice, and acai bowls too. Black Farmer's Hub is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays. Come get your $25 back. That's what got me started. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted to train. I had supervisees, and then it happened naturally. And so then I realized, oh, I can provide trainings with continuing ed. With continuing credits. Mm. And as I started working on that application, it was so much more than I imagined. So as I started preparing myself to provide the program, it just became more evident to me that I needed to increase my own education, hence going back to school. So I said, okay, I don't want to just go and get another certification. I really want to be positioned and postured to teach. So as I was trying to form my training program then, even without a name, I realized, ooh, I need to reposition myself. And get some higher level of education myself and then revisit this.
Yeah.
So then I moved to DC. I went back to school and it was really a wrap from there because I knew for certain, like I love to teach and do these trainings, these trauma-informed trainings, creating curriculums, comprehensive curriculums, because people need things broken down for them in a way that they can understand. So this is not just for counselors. You know, I want to be able to go into any profession and educate them. So, for example, last year I did a trauma-informed training for pretrial services in DC.
Hmm.
So every profession really needs that. I've been helping my church, you know, develop more trauma-informed, you know, care within, you know, ministries and just the infrastructure. So it, because it's when people hear trauma or trauma-informed, they think counseling. No, it's really about the structure of environment and having a supportive environment that's conducive to healing. Mm-hmm. And so helping people and organizations understand that and learn and know how to structure their businesses, organizations, practices, you know, to have it, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And so if organizations truly understood trauma, what would they stop doing like right now?
Burning out their employees.
Mm. Expound on that a little.
So, if the helper is burnt out, how much help are we really doing? So then that goes back to the beginning of our conversation of if you're not caring for yourself, you can't make the great impact that you're trying to make. So what I've noticed is, you know, all of these professions seem to, or all, a lot of these organizations seem to play out of the same playbook in terms of burning out employees. Everybody's understaffed and people are overworked and underpaid and there's these high expectations and, you know, but we're expected to make this great impact, but everybody's burnt out and stressed out and struggling.
Yeah.
So for organizations to have more resources and care and strategies to prevent employee burnout, like support your staff in being able to like do their jobs to the best of their ability without running themselves into the ground. And that goes back to policy. Wow. What policies are in place in these organizations? So it's going back to looking at the structure.
Yeah.
Because a lot of companies will say, oh yeah, go take care of yourself. But the policies and structures that you have in place do not allow for that.
No, not at all. And I can tell you, and I found myself guilty of it as I went up the ranks, but those dependable, hardworking employees, man, you tend to abuse them because you know things are going to get done. And if you're not careful, you have to really be mindful because you'll lean on them more than anyone else. And
exactly.
It just makes you wonder, like, the ones who are slacking, are they so smart that they figured it out where they just, hey, I'll be incompetent. I'll do things haphazardly and they'll never ask me to work, you know.
The more you show them that you can handle, the more they're going to give you.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so, so true. Wow, this has been great. I have one more question for you. Why you laughing? Why you laughing? This is great, real.
This went by quicker than I was thinking. I'm like, oh, last question already?
Yeah, see, I told you. But I do want, I know that there are some nuggets that were dropped. And people benefited from this discussion. But I want to ask you this. For someone listening who feels stuck or broken, what would you want them to hear right now?
Mm. If you're stuck and you're broken, that you're still worthy. Mm. You're still worthy of more life more love and healing. You deserve healing. Amen. And you also deserve to meet yourself where you are and give yourself grace while you are where you are to allow yourself to heal. You can't beat yourself into healing. Yeah. You can't condemn yourself into healing. You got to ease into healing. Healing is soft. So the being gentle with yourself as you do the things you need to do to take care of you.
Wow. That was a drop the mic moment right there, man. I love that answer. And what I do on the show is before we close out, I give the mic to you. You can talk about anything you want. You can tell our listeners about your company, how to get in contact with you, any words of encouragement, whatever you want to do, the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, if there's anything that anyone is out there working on or striving towards, I definitely want to offer some encouragement to keep going and keep pushing. You know, we get setbacks and, you know, things come up, but I definitely encourage to keep going and keep pushing. And every day that you wake up and you have breath in your body, you have an opportunity to keep going, no matter what yesterday looked like. So that's one. The other thing would be, so I just finished school, and in terms of my business, there's nothing that I'm selling. I am creating curriculums that I will ultimately use to train different entities.
Awesome.
But I do, I want to encourage though, we're talking about healing, right? And in social media, we know all the therapy speak, but I want to encourage people to take a step back and maybe recognize that every discomfort that you feel is not trauma.
Yeah.
And you can be activated without being traumatized, and don't rely on social media for all your education. While there are some great pages, yes, you can get really misinformed, and I don't believe in gatekeeping. So I don't have an issue with any providers that are on social media sharing the information, because it should be. Healing is not supposed to be singular. Healing happens in community and connection. So also that, especially for those who maybe can't afford therapy, that, you know, therapy doesn't have to be the end all be all, you know, especially everyone doesn't have access to it. So having access to community, having access to emotional support, you know, engaging in, you know, things that bring you joy, releasing tension from your body. There are just so many other ways to help you process and work through things. I don't ever like sending the message that therapy is the only way, even though I do encourage it, and a lot of people really need to go. Yeah. I just also understand that access to care can be limited. So I never want people who can't afford care to not be able to receive it.
Amen. Amen.
So I'm going to do, you know, I still have to do my due diligence to, you know, spread these resources and, you know, education, you know, throughout our communities. So, yeah, I don't have anything to sell. I don't have anything in particular to promote. I just want people to take care of themselves. I want to promote taking care of your own well-being.
Yeah. Well, you touched so many. I know for a fact you touched some hearts today. And I have quite a few people who consistently reach out to me after an episode. And I already know what they're going to say because you really were a blessing today. But I do. And based on what you just said, I want people to walk away a little less harsh with themselves. And then just more encouraged, and then curious about their own stories, right? So this was definitely productive, beneficial, and again, it was a blessing. So
yes.
It was great touching bases with you again. Absolutely. It was.
We have to stay in touch.
Yeah,
this has been awesome.
We will. I'll come back on here and drop some more knowledge.
EC_scholar. That's my Instagram.
Gotcha.
I mean, I post some professional stuff, but it's really a personal page. I try to just be a human, not just a therapist.
Yeah. And it shows, too, and I think people connect with you that much better. I know you mentioned social media. There was a time, I think just maybe 2 months ago, I cut social media and really just stopped watching television, for the most part, the news and all of that for about a month. It was just getting on both sides. I was just hearing and just seeing the emotions high, and it was just a lot, and it was draining. And I was like, I need to step away from this. And I felt so much better. But to your point, I'm not trying to be a gatekeeper and tell people what they should and shouldn't do. I just know what worked for me. And
I think that's awesome, though, that you took control, over your own intake. I actually was having a session talking about all the stuff going on in the world. And I encourage, filter your intake. We don't have to just be constantly subjected to all of this.
Yeah.
It's too much. And we still deserve to live and function, and not be paralyzed from day to day because of all of the atrocities.
That's right. That's right. And you'll find yourself, and I can tell you from experience, you're responding to, links people send you, then you're going down your feed. Next thing you know, 3 hours gone. And I'm like, I don't know about you. Well, I do know you're very busy. I don't have 3 hours to waste on social media like that. So, yeah. But it was great connecting again, and we will be in touch. And as always, you always, always, always have a place on the Unknown Preacher LA, my sister.
Thank you so much, my brother.
Yes, indeed. Bye.
Bye.
Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown Preacher.